Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, and welcome to The Debrief from the Business of Fashion, where each week we go deep on our most popular BOF professional stories with the correspondents who created them. I'm Lauren Sherman. Talk to any fashion marketing executive, and it feels like they're chasing one thing and one thing only: youth. But what makes Gen Z, which accounts for 25% of the global population, so unique and crucial to the fashion industry right now? BOF Insights, a special group within the business of fashion that creates in-depth proprietary reports synthesizing months of research and reporting, recently put its focus on Gen Z, identifying six personas that help explain how and why this group engages with fashion. You can download the report at shop.businessoffashion.com. And today, I have with me two members of the BOF Insights team, Rahul Malik and Diana Lee, to discuss their findings. Diana and Rahul, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us. Delighted to be here.
Thanks, Lauren. It's great to be here.
So tell me a little bit more about BOF Insights and how your team fits into the BOF ecosystem.
So BOF Insights is the newest business from the business of fashion. We think of ourselves as a data and analysis think tank that's tackling many of the topics that we're writing about day in and day out, but trying to come up with our own proprietary data-driven view on these topics. Topics that we feel like if we spend a few months speaking to a number of executives in the industry, trying to really speak to consumers and analyze their behavior, we can push the conversation and help executives shape how they're thinking about how their companies should tackle many of the subjects that we're looking at.
I love BOF Insights because we always want to have data to back up our points and our stories. So now we have original data that you all have mined and put together. I've been working on stories for years at a time, but I'm not like working on it all the time. I'm working on it like a couple times a month, and then 12 months later, suddenly it's a story. But this is something you're working on constantly. It's a very, very, very in-depth report. What goes into putting these together?
We spend months digging into a particular topic. And where we typically start is trying to speak to 20 or 30 executives at brands, at retailers, at different companies, depending on the topic. And what we found is when we have 20 or 30 conversations with people in different geographies, at companies who are targeting different consumers, we can really synthesize that and take a step back and come up with a real sense as to what the industry knows about a particular subject and really what it's uncertain about, what it's still trying to figure out. And then based on those conversations, we'll try and supplement that with our own analysis. If we're looking at a new market that's rapidly growing, we'll spend a lot of time trying to figure out how big is that market? How fast will it be growing? And those are very ambiguous questions. And what we try and do is just give ourselves some parameters to try and come up with information that we feel like is really usable and helpful to the industry. And finally, what we often do is then go and speak to consumers themselves. And so if we're looking at a category like designer bags, which we've spent a lot of time researching, or if we're looking at a new fast-growing segment like the resale market, we'll go and speak to a lot of consumers and ask them, if you're heavily engaged with this category, you're buying a lot of designer bags, this is what really motivates you and inspires you in fashion, or you buy and sell a lot of resale, why is that? What are your observations about the state of the industry today? And we'll also look for consumers who don't spend a lot of time in that area and ask them, you know, what is your awareness? Why are you interested or not? and try and bring that information together in a point of view that we feel like will really arm executives as they themselves are trying to figure out, do I need to launch a resale or secondhand business for my company? Or how am I thinking of evolving our designer bags strategy going forward? Since for many companies, this is such an important category. And our most recent foray has been many months thinking about a really unique customer base. And to support that, we actually did a few different things. And Diana, you led that. So I'll let you speak a bit about what we did.
Thank you so much, Rahul. So for this particular report on Gen Z and fashion in the age of realism, my co-author Benjamin Schneider and I conducted focus groups. We also did a proprietary survey with a company called Juve Consulting, which is basically this agency that was created by Gen Zers to advise on Gen Z topics. We also did a large-scale analysis of public social media profiles with a company called Quilt AI, which is an AI insights company. And to Rahul's point, we also conducted a number of interviews across the whole of the industry with senior fashion stakeholders and experts that came from brands, retailers, agencies, gaming platforms, and resale platforms, and so on. So there really is a wealth of information that we drew upon specifically for this Gen Z and fashion report in order to be able to synthesize our findings.
So with Quilt AI, you mentioned that you pulled social media information from them. There are so many companies that we use at BOF if we need stats about social conversation around a particular brand, et cetera. What do they do with AI that made them interesting to you to use for this report in particular?
Certainly. Happy to tackle that. So Quilt AI was an integral partner for this report. And I really think what differentiates our Gen Z report from a lot of what's out in the market is the fact that we were able to identify six key personality clusters that are able to characterize the Gen Z population on the whole with regard to how they behave and how they have different preferences towards brands and towards influencers and the like. So even though it's difficult to pigeonhole any one person into a cluster, these are still really useful heuristics when you think about being able to have some actionable takeaways and to think about at a broad level, what can a company do to be able to tackle this cluster? So Quilt AI came in because they're this AI insights company, and they were able to actually help us define the clusters by doing the social media analysis. So there are a number of different development stages. So first off, they have an AI model to be able to do that large scale analysis of existing material on Gen Z so that they can come up with the clusters. So there are six that we identified in the end, which I'm happy to go into detail later on. The next step is that they then curated a subset of 500 social media profiles on Instagram, and then they assigned them to the clusters. And then the next step was actually looking at 5,000 posts that originated from those 500 profiles, both from a text as well as an imagery perspective, to be able to understand how the clusters performed against the six key values that BOF Insights identified. So we identified these six values through focus groups, and namely their information, identity, improvement, ideology, introspection, and formality. And these are what we think are really distinguishing Gen Z from different generations that are older than them. Quilt AI basically looked at these six values and looked at how strongly each of the clusters demonstrated these values through the AI model. And then finally, the findings were actually scaled up so the clusters are representative of the U.S. Gen Z population as a whole. So this is what is really unique about the report in terms of being able to come up with these psychographics to be able to say, here is how you can look at Gen Z in a broad manner to be able to say, how can you then take that information, run with it, and do something with it.
One of the things I just wanted to add that we observe quite frequently when we were looking at other studies of a particular demographic is sometimes they feel a bit ivory tower. They feel like people speculating, observing about a particular group of people and what they value and why they behave a certain way and how they act without really speaking to them. And one of the benefits we found of working with a company like Quilt is we were looking at actual social media behavior and really synthesizing that in a way that felt really clear to us to inform then how we think about a new demographic.
Yeah, it seems like it's quite valuable because you can see what they're actually doing and not just what their intentions are. And a quick question on that, I want to go back to these clusters because I think a lot of brands use personas to guide their work. And I'm sure the fact that you came up with some personas for them to look at is really helpful. I want to learn more about them. But really quickly, one of the things that I find when I'm using survey data for stories, and especially when it's about consumer sentiment, my feeling is that what consumers say they're going to do and what they say they're going to believe in does not always translate into how they shop or how they spend money. I don't generally see people voting with their dollars in the way that a consumer survey would say. And it sounds like the Quilt AI data almost allowed you to avoid that because of the fact you were seeing their actual behavior, but you did also do a big survey. So how do you use that data in the survey and communicate it, knowing that like what people check off, I always think about sustainability in particular, but it's also about brand values and what they expect from their employers and stuff like that. And I certainly use that information when there's a good survey that is big enough and feels legitimate, but I always kind of take it with a grain of salt because it's just intention. It's not action. So how do you reconcile that when you put all these reports together, but in this one in particular, because people want to know what Gen Z is thinking so much?
That is actually why we try to disperse our data sources. And so we talked about how there are both the expert interviewers that are coming from brands and retailers that are at the front lines, and they can actually see the sales information about what Gen Z customers are buying. We also conducted this large scale survey, which you just alluded to, which was done in partnership with Juve Consulting. So that was a survey of almost 1,000 Gen Zers in the US. And Gen Zers are essentially aged from 12 to 25. And we took a sample that was across the US, so it wasn't concentrated in just the coastal areas. And we were really just trying to be able to say from this large scale sample, what are some of the patterns that we're seeing? And then we coupled that with focus group information, where we're really digging then into some of the underlying rationale for why someone might actually say one thing but do another. So a really interesting example was when we asked about favorite brands of Gen Z, and this was unprompted response. You actually saw Nike being first, Gucci was second, and generally the top 20 brands were actually the heavy hitters. So these are the companies that are already very well known. And yet when we spoke to Gen Zers and focus groups, they actually talked about how they have a deep desire to actually support marginalized communities and to also support more niche and more underrepresented designers. And yet that's one different thing that we saw in the surveys. And so there are definitely some sort of contradictions or oxymorons that are in this data. And I think one thing as well in our report that we identified is that sometimes the stated behaviors of Gen Z doesn't always match up with what they want to do. And part of it is because they're still such a young generation. So most of them are not yet in the workforce. And so therefore they're relying on things like parental allowances or they're working at side hustles. And so there's a mismatch potentially between what they want to do in terms of being able to allocate their dollars towards items that might be more sustainable or those that might come from a more niche designer, but they're at a higher price than they're feasibly able to afford. So that underlying reason, which is related to funding, is actually a key reason for explaining why we see some of the discrepancies in the behaviors.
That kind of brings me to the next question, which is that in the report, you say that the purchasing power of Gen Z is $360 billion. I think people hear that number a lot about different cohorts of consumers, and they don't really understand what exactly does purchasing power mean? Where did you get the data? And how does it compare to the purchasing power of the millennials?
When we talk about the purchasing power, that is referring to the disposable income that Gen Zers have. So this is a combination of income that can come from a variety of sources, whether that's full-time or part-time employment. It's also allowances from family members and side hustles, less the tax liability. So all this is information that was gleaned from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, as well as other sources that collect census and survey data. One thing to note is that Gen Zers obviously are not fully fledged in terms of being workforce members because the oldest are still only 25, but this is a purchasing power that will continue to increase. And so therefore Gen Zers will have a widening increase in terms of how they're impacting the economy. However, from the sources that we've seen, it looks like Gen Z is actually going to be less well off than millennials, who were less well off than the generations that came before. And that was one really big takeaway from our report, which saw that there is a widening generational gap when it comes to median family wealth, and that is actually going to be impacting Gen Z as well. So they're graduating into this financial insecurity. And that was one really surprising finding. And I think it actually goes to explain, on some hand, why Gen Z is thriftier and more entrepreneurial than some of the generations that have come before, because they need to be.
I think that plays into a narrative that formed the backbone of the report, which was we did a bunch of detailed work in surveying Gen Z, speaking to them in focus groups, analyzing their social media behavior. But one of the very interesting observations was if one took a step back and just thought very simply and at a high level about each of the generations before Gen Z and the context in which those generations were coming of age, the economic and social events that were shaping the world around them when they were coming of age, it felt to us that there was a very almost simple framing of a life outlook that characterized that generation. Baby boomers were coming of age post-World War II. There was kind of a broad economic prosperity, and it felt like there was this age of optimism. And Gen X was coming of age at a time when norms were changing and workforce participation was rapidly rising. And it felt like there was this age of independence that characterized their outlook on life. And millennials were often the children of more prosperous baby boomers and are coming of age as the internet is also something to come into existence. It feels like there was this age of idealism. But if we think back and even reflect on the current moment, where we have the backdrop of the climate crisis, we have the pandemic, we have kind of looming geopolitical potential crises and conflicts, but we also have the internet and this digital age that Gen Z has come of age just from the beginning. It's innate. It feels like it's this age of realism, of reality. And that point of financial insecurity just feels like one element of it. And it feels like this outlook really colors so much of what we were just further able to explore in a lot of the other work in the report.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at Burrow.com/ACAST. That's Burrow.com/ACAST. Burrow.com/ACAST.
Let's talk about these personas, and we don't have to go super in depth, but how did you come up with them and what are they exactly and how do you see executives using them? I went to Ralph Lauren's Investor Day in 2018 and they had put together their own personas for the global consumer and then the Chinese consumer. They had a different subset of personality types, which was very interesting. But this just seems like such a useful thing for people who work in the industry. Can you talk a bit about what the actual personas were and what they've showed you about the group?
The six personality clusters that you're referring to from the report are the forgers, the signalers, the satellites, the rebels, the explorers, and the idealists. So these are high-level groupings that characterize the U.S. Gen Z population. And we mentioned previously that Quilt AI was actually able to take information and then extrapolate it to the whole of the U.S. So this is representative of the overall Gen Z population. And these are actually going to be quite useful for brands and retailers when they think about, you know, who is their target consumer, and then really being able to derive some of the interests and the motivations. And these clusters were created with six different values in mind. So I mentioned them a little bit earlier, but essentially there are some of these underlying values that we identified as being unique for Gen Z that distinguish them from the older generations. So I'll go into these in detail now. So for example, information was the very first tenet. And this is basically about how Gen Z has had this unprecedented level of information at their fingertips. And so they have this power to be able to find out all this information and then to also engage with brands and influencers to a level that other generations before weren't able to do at their time. And then the second value was around identity, which is around wanting to be unique and to be seen as individuals. Improvement is the third tenet, and this is important for Gen Z because they really value personal growth. And this goes back to a little bit of the conversation beforehand about wanting to have nicer things, whether that is things that are sustainable or things that are created by these niche designers. that currently there is that divergence between what the cohort is able to afford versus what they want to have. So there's a lot of aspirations in Gen Z, and that's the improvement element. The fourth factor is ideology, which is just speaking to the level of activism that Gen Z has. And so this is about how they will call out companies for perceived hypocrisies. And it's really important for Gen Z that companies are actually walking the walk and not just talking the talk. Introspection is the fifth pillar. And so this is really just about how for Gen Z, mental well-being is very important, and mental health is no longer something that's taboo to talk about. And so there's really this period of reflection that was further enhanced by COVID because we were necessarily kind of left to our own devices. And this gave Gen Z a lot of time to try to figure out what it was that was important to them. And then the last value is around informality, which is actually applicable to society as a whole, which is around the relaxation of dress codes. But particularly for Gen Z, it's impactful because Gen Z, as they're maturing, likely they're never going to have the same kind of demarcation between a workplace wardrobe and their everyday wardrobe, like some of the other generations have had to deal with. So these were the six values that Quilt AI then ran against each of the different clusters. And so each one of them has kind of a different combination in terms of how they index on a score from 0 to 10. So there's way too much detail to be able to cover in a single podcast, but I'll give you an example. The idealists are about 7% of the US Gen Z population. And they're the cohort that is very mission driven. And they try to have this purpose in life that is greater than themselves. And they want to be able to contribute and to give back. So for them, they are a 10 out of 10 on ideology, which is the value that's around activism and being able to kind of push for a change in society to do better. And then on the other hand, you have forgers, which is actually the population in Gen Z that is actually most apparent by volume. Again, kind of keeping in mind that the caveat is that any one individual can likely have multiple characteristics from each one of the clusters. But if you take a step back, generally the forgers are the most populous out of the Gen Z clusters. And forgers are actually a 10 out of 10 when it comes to introspection. So this is a group that is very ambitious and very confident, and they know what they want. But in order to have gotten to that level, they need to know what it is that matters to them and what their values are. So for them, reflection and introspection is a very strong value. So these are just snippets of the detail that we were able to garner from our collaboration with Quilt AI. And as you can see, this is the kind of information that brands and retailers are then able to parlay and to be able to leverage to say, what is really going to speak to these different consumer groups? So what is it that is the underlying motivation? And then on a more superficial level, there's also information that was gathered about, you know, what exactly are the fashion trends and styles that are trending for this particular cluster, because that is relevant to kind of their worldview.
Can you give one example of like a fashion trend that was associated with a cluster?
Yeah, certainly. So I like talking about the satellites. Satellites are the group that is actually most likely to follow trends and to jump on that bandwagon. And they're the most likely to respect the opinions of authorities and influencers and celebrities. And so for them, Y2K is a really big fashion. And so a value that is actually tops is informality. So they're a 10 out of 10, but everything else is actually a lot less spiky. And so what you see is that there's a lot of jeans, there's a lot of crop tops. Basically, fashions are a little bit safe, you might say. So like it's retro, it's things that have been successful once upon a time, and now they've come back into fashion. So kind of the satellites are essentially what we're talking about, like people who tend to have an orbit around another authority. And so in this case, Y2K has come back into fashion, and it's something that they have jumped on in full force.
One other thing you all did that seems extremely valuable is you put together this sort of playbook of action points of what executives can do to work with these consumers. Again, I know we're only skimming the surface here, but can you go a bit into what those four pillars were and how you put them together after gathering all this information, and how did you synthesize it into this playbook?
So our report does try to warn the more youth-focused brands and retailers about how they need to adapt to stay relevant. But if you take a step back, we also think that this playbook is applicable for all fashion companies, given how different Gen Z is from previous generations. And so those four pillars, Lauren, that you're talking about, those are the ones that have to move in concert. So those are brand communications, brand style, brand communities, and finally, brand evolution. So I will just touch on these very quickly, but brand communications is basically about engaging Gen Z in a naturalistic way and speaking to them in their vernacular, whether that's through leveraging brand ambassadors or directly utilizing user-generated content. And most importantly, it's about aligning what companies actually say with what they do, given that we've talked about how Gen Z has the power and they will absolutely call out companies where they think there is that mismatch between values and actions. Brand style is about keeping true to the brand ethos and having a point of view in the face of what's happening with the design process. And what we mean here is that in the past, it used to be the case that styles were more dictated by designers. It's whatever showed up in the runways, and then there was a trickle-down effect. That is changing because styles are now bubbling up in real life, and because of social media, they're taking on a power of their own. So Gen Z is less beholden to the traditional tastemakers. And trends are also faster than they ever were before. So for a brand, it's about striking the right balance of integrating brands in a selective manner, but then also molding them so they become part of the DNA. Brand communities is about getting to this revelation that Gen Z doesn't actually necessarily see the delineation between the physical world and the digital world in the same way as older generations. And so the onus is on fashion communities to actually be able to create successful communities both online and offline. And so this is really where we think that cluster research can be really helpful, because then brands and retailers can understand what are the magnets that are really going to be able to pull Gen Zs into their orbit. And then the last piece of advice that we would give is around brand evolution, which is all about being able to accommodate and also to stay ahead of cultural and technological shifts. So in this case, we did multiple examples about once popular brands, such as the ones that were really cool with millennials, that have since struggled with capturing the new youths, and those that are in the midst of a turnaround, and finally, those that have successfully adapted to the times.
Raul, what were your big takeaways?
I think in the context of the specific topic, what I was most inspired by was this sense that, of course, every fashion company and the fashion industry as a whole is focused on and thinking about how youth culture is evolving. That's what pushes the agenda. And so there was this question as we were scoping the topic and as the team was digging in of why is this a particularly unique moment? Or is this even a particularly unique moment to examine a particular generation? And I think the outcome of the work was that it really does feel like there is a greater gulf. I think Diana and Ben called this a cultural chasm in the report between Gen Z and prior generations than there was, even if you think of millennials and Gen X. And I think focusing in on that gulf and thinking about the behaviors and the values that contribute to that really stood out to me. And if I think about the work that BOF Insights we'll be doing, you know, over the coming months as we think about the next set of topics that are on the agenda for executives at big brands and small brands and big retailers and emerging retailers, I think trying to really apply this critical eye of why is this topic particularly unique now and how can we arm those executives with a unique set of data that really helps them craft a strategy that feels specific to the current moment, it feels really important to me. And I think will guide a lot of the work that we do going forward.
Diana, you've done quite a few of these reports at this point. What was the big light bulb moment for you in this one?
The big light bulb moment for me personally was around unveiling the data around the financial insecurity. So this is a huge point because of how much that generational wealth gap has actually widened in the US. So for example, households that are headed up by millennials are actually poorer when it comes to the median family wealth than were the households headed up by baby boomers when those baby boomers were the same ages. So this state of the world is set to continue for Gen Z. And I think again, it drives a lot of the Gen Z psyche when it comes to how they need to be very thrifty and also very entrepreneurial. And I think the implication for the fashion industry is that they're essentially between a rock and a hard place when it comes to needing to replenish their customer base, because the baby boomers are aging out. And once you are past the age of 60, your spend on apparel and footwear drops precipitously. So there's going to be a massive void that retailers need to be able to fill in order to kind of deliver the same levels of growth. And at the same time, that Gen Z spending power is particularly tricky to unlock because the cash is really hard won and because this generation has really different values. And so I think this is a lot for any fashion brand or retailer to grapple with. And this is the big challenge that they need to be able to confront.
Thank you both so much for being here. It was great to learn more about what you all are up to. And everyone can just go to businessoffashion.com to download this report, correct?
Correct. The specific URL is shop.businessoffashion.com. And not only this report, but our previous research on topics such as resale and digital fashion and designer bags and supply chain is also available. And what I'd also mention is what BOF Insights does is also work with companies on far more customized and bespoke research, far more specific to what a particular company might be dealing with or tackling at a given moment. And so if there's ever interest, our team is always standing by and excited to work with companies in that regard.
Great. That's so good to know. And we'll also have a link to the report in the show notes. Thank you both again. It was such a pleasure. And I hope you come on when you release the next report in a few months.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Lauren, for the opportunity.
Thanks, Lauren. It's been great to be here.
You have been listening to The Debrief, produced and edited by Emma Clark, Kate Barton, Eric Bria, and Georgie Rutherford in the BOF studio. Thanks to everyone involved. I'm Lauren Sherman. I'll be back next Wednesday with a new episode. Thanks so much for joining us, and be sure to follow us and like us wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it.
You can join BOF Professional today with an exclusive 25% discount on an annual membership covering key industry topics from sustainability to technology to marketing, with access to our case studies, live events, and iOS app. To get this special offer and benefit from 25% off of a membership, head to the link in the episode show notes or enter the coupon code DEBRIEF at checkout. Visit businessoffashion.com/memberships.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.